back to the Mad Moon podcast. So this is my first episode of the Maternity Leave spin-off, and I have a wonderful guest for you. But before I tell you about Lauren, I'll tell you who I am. So if you haven't listened to the Mad Moon podcast before, I'm Katie Moon, nurse, mother, and expecting my second child, hence the Maternity Leave spin-off, and something to keep my brain active. So today's guest is Lauren Williams. She's a physiotherapist. A lot of you might already know her because she is the Mummy MOT Warwickshire. We talk about motherhood generally, home birth, so please consider that a trigger warning, as Lauren does share her birth story, breastfeeding, and why she is so passionate about antenatal and postnatal rehab. So I really hope you enjoy it. Please bear in mind, if there are little ears around, there may be some fruity language. And like I say, we do talk about birth and birth trauma. But I really hope you enjoy this episode because I really enjoyed recording it. We know each other, I'll tell anybody listening, because you were recommended to me and I saw you all over Instagram. So I think maybe actually if we kick off with the Mummy MOT, because one of my questions and one of the reasons I wanted you on is because you weren't a parent when you were doing the Mummy MOTs, and you had so much passion about women's health and antenatal and postpartum health, which I was like, oh, I wonder where that stems from, like when she's not a parent herself yet. So I'd just like to know like how that started and how... kind of like what the difference is now that you've experienced it as a patient.
Okay. Cool. Well, I have been a physio for like 11 years now. So I sort of started my career like doing the kind of normal band 5 rotational roles that just kind of the traditional route for physios. And I specialized at some point a couple of years in musculoskeletal physio, so in MSK, and just where I was working at the time, there was a need for someone to help with the women's health caseload, and I volunteered happily, and it just kind of went from there, really. So it's been probably about, God, I don't even know, 6-7 years, something like that, since I was under like some brilliant clinical mentorship with one of my old jobs in the NHS, and it just kind of stemmed from there, really. But mainly I started doing the Mummy MOTs full time actually in January last year, so that's coming up to 18 months ago, which is mad. But that was, believe it or not, completely by accident, the same month I managed to get myself knocked up.
Of course, because you just found out you were pregnant when you saw me.
Yeah. I literally went self-employed and got pregnant within a week of each other.
Oh, the timing of things like that is always shite, isn't it?
I was similar.
I started a new job and... I was like 22 weeks pregnant when I started the role, and I've gone back from that leave and I'm 30 odd weeks pregnant. It's like the worst employee.
I hope it's going well, guys.
I'm off again.
Yeah.
My big question, I'm really curious to know, how is it being on the other side? And I know you've had some issues. And I know this is really hard because we don't want to say the NHS, we love the NHS, it's amazing. But unfortunately, there are pockets of it that aren't. And, you know, we can sit until we're blue in the face and talk about resourcing and funding and all these things. But ultimately, I'll say it, women's health, women's like research into women, all of it is just dog shit. And now you can articulate it in the nice professional way and share your personal experience as a new mum.
Well, I can try. I totally agree. I mean, maternity care in this country has just got so far to go, hasn't it? It's just dreadful. The actual provision, the bare minimum that women get. I personally don't feel like the anything about maternity care is set up to actually empower women to make informed choices. I think there's so much coercion, there's so much misinformation, there's so much just scaremongering, and it makes me so mad actually as I think about it. But obviously a big part of my job is listening to birth stories and treating women who've had traumatic births or birth injuries, and actually just also normal, straightforward, non-traumatic births. But
Just to go off on a tangent
yeah,
though,
because I think
sorry, just while you brought it up and it's on my mind, how did that have an effect, like hearing all these traumatic birth stories as a pregnant woman?
I think I'm quite, because I've heard so many before I was pregnant, I was quite happy to dissociate almost. I think I'm quite good at that. So it didn't tend to bother me, and everyone I saw, they were so sweet. They were like, "I'm so sorry, to tell you this. I don't want to tell you." And I'm like, "No, honestly, it's fine. Go for it. I've heard it all before anyway." Not to try and, minimize their experience, invalidate that, but I've heard some pretty awful things, and I don't take it personally. I don't take that on board. Pretty
That's
good at.
really good because I'm the opposite. I hear lots of horror stories or I'm exposed to lots of something. And then I do the opposite and I then make that reality kind of like mine, or I make it like, oh my God, that I've heard that's happened so much, when actually I'd need to remind myself that that's not real. I'm just seeing a lot of a bad thing because I work in intensive care. So it's good that you could disassociate and say, actually, I'm just exposing myself to hearing a lot of these stories, but it's not actually happening to to everybody.
Well, I think that was like a really, really big factor in me deciding to have a home birth, because I was just like, I am not going anywhere near doctors, for one. Fuck no. I don't want to be anywhere near a doctor when I'm in labor. Not going to happen. And, there are obviously some amazing doctors, and there are obviously, it goes without saying, some incredible, amazing midwives. And my midwives were brilliant in the end. But I kind of wanted to be just not anywhere close to a hospital setting, because I think I personally attributed a lot of the trauma that happened, that I've heard. I kind of personally attribute that to a lot of the time just being in the wrong environment.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's so funny because I have the complete opposite feeling, but it's not because I disagree with you, because I've done a lot of reading since and research. And my best friend had a home birth, and her experience has really made me change my opinion and view. But still, for me personally, I'm the complete opposite, and I want to be in a theatre. I want a surgeon. I want midwives. I want a fridge full of blood. I want a cupboard full of drugs. Like, I'm the complete opposite in that sense. But I do agree with you from what I've read. And again, because it's women's health and whatnot, there's very little out there, but everything does point to there is more likely to be trauma or something significant happened to mother or baby in the hospital setting.
It's just it's big if you're if you're if you're around people who are trained to intervene, that's what they're going to recommend that they do. And as that can just lead to a cascade of intervention. But I'm all for it's about choice at the end of the day. And if you feel more comfortable in a hospital setting, then all power to you. Like, that's exactly where you should be. It's about, where you feel most comfortable. That's the most important factor, I think, when you're
Yeah, I think
choosing
you've just put
where
it
you want to
so
give birth.
well. Yeah, you have. You just said it so well. Look, it's about having the choice, and that's the difference, isn't it? Completely.
100%.
Sorry, I knew I'd end up going off on a million tangents, but I'm glad we've just brought up 10 things in one. But just going back to it, so what about the expectation? So going from being a physio in women's health and then mummy MOTs specifically, and then being on the flip side of it, like how was that, like expectation versus reality?
I actually think I kind of like I was quite lucky with my pregnancy. I kind of not breezed through it, because you don't just breeze through pregnancy, do you? But I felt okay, and I felt like I coped quite well with that. But I actually was really surprised at how long it took me to recover on the other side. Like, I really felt like I'd been hit by a bus. like a huge, big old fucking bus. It
And just
was.
to add, you are actually normally a very healthy, like physically active person, aren't you?
Yeah, relatively. Yeah, I would say or try. Yeah, and it was just it actually took, I think I definitely underestimated how easy, in air quotes, it would be to recover from kind of vaginal delivery. I wasn't expecting that at all. Yeah, it really took it out of me, and I don't think I felt like anywhere close to normal for 8 weeks easily. But pushing 10, 12 before I could even really think about exercise, more than just a walk that I'd been doing or I'd been gradually building up, you know. So yeah, I
Honestly,
think I definitely underestimated it. It was a big reality check.
if it makes you feel better, I've underestimated absolutely every element of motherhood. Literally, there's not one thing that has happened the way I thought it would. And again, it just comes down to like women are just insane machines. Like, and because
Yes.
so many women do it and make it look so effortless, and obviously now we're in this, evil era of social media where you only see the highlights. So, and not a lot, I mean, it's getting better, isn't it? Like things like this, people do share their stories and tell the truth, but we still just have that. I still have that impression, like, oh, everyone's a mom. Like, people are knocking babies out all the time. It'll be fine. I'll be great.
Sure,
But
for
it's
sure.
hard. It is hard.
Hard. I think it depends, like obviously who you follow, like what you fill your feed with. That's really important. But yeah, no, completely. I sometimes think it's almost better to underestimate something though, and then you kind of learn it for yourself. Like you hear all the time, don't you? Like, I wish someone had told me this, or I wish I'd been warned about it. But I sometimes think, but would you have really listened if
No,
someone did
and if
about
they
it? Or
if
or
they
would you
did
just
tell
kind of
us,
go, that won't happen to me? Or you just don't know how much of that you're actually going to take on, because actually in pregnancy you get so much unsolicited advice anyway.
that is
You don't know
exactly what I
what
was
to
going to
listen
say.
to, like, yeah, you don't know what to give weight to and what not to. So it's really hard. I
It
think
is
you just
really
have to
hard.
discover it for yourself, don't you?
Yeah, and people project and they don't mean to, and I'm awful for it, which to be honest is going to bring us really nicely onto one of the things I did want to speak to you about. So I try so hard not to project about my breastfeeding journey, but I had such an awful, hideous breastfeeding journey. It was just so traumatic and made me so mentally unwell. And I don't believe you've had that experience. So are you still breastfeeding? Is that right?
Yes, yeah, still breastfeeding.
So how's your breastfeeding journey been?
It certainly wasn't easy. I mean, I remember you telling me about your breastfeeding journey when we did your mummy and Moti, and that, yeah, I mean, I just want to say that it is really, really hard, and like everyone's individual circumstances are completely different, and there are so many options, I guess, when it comes to feeding. But I just don't ever think that anyone should be feel like you shouldn't feel guilty, you shouldn't feel, all the rest of it. I know you know this anyway, but just wanted to put that out there.
It helps though hearing it again, especially as I'm weeks away from having my second baby
God,
and my
yeah.
hormones are wreaking havoc, and the guilt I'm feeling because I've made the decision not to even attempt to breastfeed, not to even get colostrum out for her, but just because of how mentally unwell I was with the hormone imbalance, with when my milk dried up, and I literally had like episodes of psychosis and intrusive thoughts, and I didn't know anything about it, and it was just I just had such an awful time. So again, to anyone listening,
Yeah.
that doesn't happen to everybody. It's not common. And there I did have an
No, but it can
amazing help.
happen.
Yeah, it can happen. And
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
lucky.
Luckily, the mental health support teams are so good generally, aren't
So
they? The
good.
perinatal health there. I've never, like, I've heard only brilliant things about them.
I can't believe how quick the intervention was when I think I sent a text. Did you have that health visitor chat line that you can send a text message? I think it
I
might
don't
just be
think so.
like
I
where
missed
I'm
it.
based. But
Yeah.
I'm sure I sent a message and just said, I've got, I wouldn't even want to find the message now. I'm sure it just said something like, I can't stop seeing images of my baby being set on fire. Like, I can't breathe. I can't do this anymore. Like, I need some help. And then within a week, I'd already had two sessions of intense CBT. I was on anti-anxiety, antidepressant. I'd seen the health visitor twice. She'd called me every day. And I just think, oh my God, that doesn't happen in normal day to day. That wouldn't have happened if I was just having intrusive thoughts, non-child related, like non-baby related.
Yeah, that's true. And that's so lucky, because obviously you've got another little person that you're responsible for and to look after. And that's why, you know, you're obviously making the right decision this time, because it comes down to, like, you have to take care of yourself first, to make sure the whole family is okay. So yeah, don't feel any guilt about that whatsoever.
Isn't it easy to forget, though, to put yourself first when you've got a baby?
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, completely. That's like, just that's the number one thing in motherhood, isn't it? Your priorities come last. Like, you're the bottom of your own priority list. But yeah, I'm still breastfeeding. It's been a bit of a challenge. I think to really truly, like, enjoy it for what it was, and at around like month five, like, it took a long time for it to not feel stressful. I can't really say much more than that. Like, I'm really glad I did it now. I'm really glad I kind of powered through, because it's so, and it was mainly, don't get me wrong, more than anything, like, just for convenience. And I'm too lazy to get up in the middle of the night and make bottle, or like keep track of that feeding schedule kind of thing. I was like, sounds a lot better to me to just be able to whip a boob into the baby's mouth and go back off to sleep. Like, yeah. that's pretty much the driving force behind my decision.
I love that, though. But that's the thing again, it comes down to having the choice, doesn't it? And with me, I did some like antenatal coursing, a private one. I'm sure everyone's heard of NCT. And again, a very privileged thing to do, because you have to pay to do it. So something that I forgot or didn't realise. So one of the things that really stuck with me in the NCT course was they gave this statistic about, I want to say that they used the language Western women, and basically said, and use the language give up. So Western women give up breastfeeding within the first 6 weeks. And they didn't say anything else. They didn't elaborate on it. They didn't talk about the benefits of formula feeding or bottles. It was all about breastfeeding and this negative statistic about Western women giving up. So I had that in my head then. And that is it. It stuck with me. I didn't think about it anymore. I just had that in my head, like, right, I'm not giving up. I'm not going to give up. I'm not giving up before 6 weeks. And that's why I pushed myself to the 6 week mark, when I really shouldn't have. And it wasn't until on reflection that I realized it's because we're privileged. Western women are more privileged, and we have choice and we have options, and we can go and buy formula at 3 o'clock in the morning because we can afford it. And we have shops that are open 24/7 up the road. So once I kind of realized that, I was able to just kind of be like, I had the privilege ick for a long time, and I still get it all the time now, but I was like, I have a choice. Like, that's probably why that statistic's the statistic that it is.
And you're right, like, that negative language around it is just so, like, laden with guilt and shaming women who don't choose to breastfeed, or choose to breastfeed for only a certain amount of time. And yeah, that's bullshit. It's just another, like, level of, again, like, controlling women's bodies, isn't it? That we, you know, with the breastfeeding being, like, there's a big debate about it recently, isn't there? I can't remember. I've just been seeing it on Instagram. But basically, like, breastfeeding is only, I think it come down to cost of living crisis, and basically people saying, well, you know, baby formula is one of the most, like, stolen or shoplifted items. And people saying, well, you know, that's stupid because breastfeeding is free, so why don't people do that? Well, breastfeeding is free if you don't place monetary value on the mother's time and energy. And, like, some mothers can't physically do that because they have to go out and work. And there's a million other reasons that, you know, women don't, can't, or choose not to breastfeed. And yeah, you're totally right. It does come down to choice, I think. Can't remember where I was going with that.
No, but I'm glad you brought it up, because I had this conversation yesterday, because formula's gone up in price again. It's gone up like £1 a tub or something, and that's on cow's milk anyway. But I keep seeing those memes that are like, if you see somebody stealing formula,
you didn't see anything.
And it's so true, and it just breaks my heart. And yeah, cost of living crisis, god, that's, we need a whole other podcast for that conversation, don't
yeah
we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
But yeah, there's not, I think, the those antenatal classes are quite kind of famous for being very like breastfeeding propaganda almost, and not saying like, actually there are loads of challenges that you could face, and these are some of the things that might happen that might cause you to maybe make a different decision. But yeah, I think there's already so much like guilt and anxiety, especially in that newborn phase, that how you feed your baby should not be another reason to feel guilty.
No, definitely not. And I definitely have a different opinion and view now, and I've realized how important it is to prioritize my mental health to be the best mom I can be, because I wasn't, and I've got a lot of blackness and just time just completely gone in those first, I'd say in the first 12 weeks, because I was just so overwhelmed with my anxiety. I look back at photos of Jack and I think, god, I don't remember him looking like that. And it's because I didn't put my own mental health first. So
yeah,
bed is best.
I'm glad that you're putting yourself first this time. Well done you. It's not easy.
I'm glad your breastfeeding journey is going well.
Yeah, finally. Thank you. Yeah, we got there in the end.
So just jumping back, because like I knew I would, I've jumped all over the place. Are you happy to share more about how your home birth went?
Yeah, sure.
And you can start from wherever you want, from making that decision to planning it to the logistics of it. Like, go wherever you want with it.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say if anyone is planning a home birth is that you can never have too many towels. Like, however many towels you think you're going to need, double it, and then you might have enough towels. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was pretty much a decision from the get-go that I think I toyed with the idea of birth center, but I've just been hearing like over and over and over again from my clients that, my plan was to go into Bluebell, but it was closed. Or my plan was to go into the birth center, but it was closed. And because of staffing, essentially, and these women, and then being sent up to labor ward, which is obviously full of doctors who are working shifts and who want to speed things along and just So labor ward was the last place I wanted to be, and I just made the decision that for me to have actual full control over how I birth, that it would need to be at home. So it just kind of made sense for me. So we hired a pool, and yeah, I mean, all through my pregnancy, I'd been told at my midwife visits, like, okay, well, if we want for your home birth to work, you're going to have to go into labor in the daytime. Like, we won't provide a home birth provision overnight. And all through these appointments, like they my midwife was literally telling me the same thing the whole time, and I never once said like, why not, that's stupid or whatever. I literally just like nodded like politely along, like, yeah, okay, that's fine, you know, we'll just see what happens at the time. But I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going into hospital, so we'll just see what happens. And I had a client who, a wonderful, amazing, very brave client, who also had a home birth, and she ended up free birthing because she had a standoff with her local hospital.
What's that and mean? What's free birthing?
Birthing with no midwife or paramedic or anyone present.
Oh my god.
But purely because they basically turned around and said to her, you're gonna have to come in, we can't do your home birth. And she said, "I'm not coming in. I'm too far along. You're gonna have to send someone." And basically, that standoff lasted longer. The baby came. She called an ambulance in the end. The paramedics arrived shortly after. But yeah, she was on her own. But I remember her saying to me, like, it was fine. I was okay. You know, she'd kind of prepared herself mentally for that scenario. She was a nurse too, interestingly. So I was kind of trying to get myself into the same headspace, like under no circumstances. I mean, under some circumstances, of course, I'd have gone into hospital. But that for me, I knew like very specifically what they would be. Yeah, so I went into labor obviously about 5 p.m. And that's when my contractions really started ramping up. I'd been in kind of faffy labor for about 24 hours or more before that. And yeah, things kind of progressed really quickly from there. So I had my warts broke at 8 p.m. and we rang the midwives again, and they said, "Oh yeah, we're sending someone out to you." And I was like, "Thank God." Right, they said, "Oh, we're sending someone over to start their shift with you because that just makes more sense." And then at 8:15, I just remember these timelines. 8:15, they rang back and said, and they spoke to my partner. 8:15, they rang back and said, "Situation has changed. You're gonna have to come in." And Jack was saying, "There's no way. Like, she's not coming in now. What's happened? 15 minutes ago, someone was on their way. So what do you mean? Like, the home birth kit is here as well as three canisters of Enterox just waiting to be used, but none of them were set up." So I was like, in quite a bit of pain at this point. Like, I felt like I needed some gas in it. I was putting off getting the pull because I didn't want to slow things down. But my waters are broken, so my contractions were getting a lot stronger. Yeah, so they had a bit of a standoff, and basically the conversation was left at, "Well, we're not coming in." And they were like, "Well, we're not sending anybody out." So Jack said, "Well, I just need someone to set up these gas and air canisters, so I'm just going to call paramedics to do that." And they went, "Okay, yeah, bye." And basically that's what we did. The paramedics arrived, bless them. I got in the pool by this point. It's about 9 o'clock, and they set up the gas and air, and then the midwives must have called back very, very shortly after the paramedics arrived. The midwives called back and said, "We changed things around. Like, we've called in the on-call midwife, and we've got two midwives on their way to you now." And we were just like, "Oh, thank you. That's brilliant. Like, amazing." But I think maybe possibly the 999 call handler had something to do with it. Who knows? But when the midwives arrived, once they were happy with everything, they sent the paramedics home and then basically just let me crack on. So I was laboring in the pool, and my contractions were getting like longer and closer together, and I wasn't really getting a break. And I just remember at some point my body just completely taking over and feeling myself push, like my uterus was just pushing, trying to push this baby out. And I had visions of like breathing the baby out, or at least like having a bit of conscious control over like when to push and when not to. But that just did not happen. Like, my body was just doing its thing, and I just had to like let it happen. It was very, very intense, and that was probably for about an hour. And then one of my midwives said, "Lauren, I think you need to get out of the pool because we're not getting anywhere." So I said to her, "I'll trust your instinct." She said, "Go and sit on the toilet. Just rest there for a minute, see what happens." So somehow Jack got me to the toilet, and I sat there, and literally two contractions later, I could feel a head. And yeah, I stood up. I remember standing up as my instinct, and I was like wrapped around my partner, and I lifted up my leg to like put it on the bath, and the baby just flew out of me. And luckily the midwife was there and she caught him. And I think it was like a proper fetal ejection reflex. It was amazing.
My God, that is insane. So did you had Rex in the bathroom?
Yeah. He was born in the bathroom,
Oh my God.
very nearly into the toilet, but I stood up. So he was like, he shot out and was caught before he hit the deck. Bless him.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
That
I
is
was really
insane.
disappointed that it didn't happen in the pool. Initially, I was like, "I'm so sad it didn't happen in the pool." But then, like, it's crazy to be sad about something that really is inconsequential and you have no control over. Yeah, and I think it took it, it 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 took a long while to process it because then, for the next hour or two was not pleasant at all. Like I chose to deliver my placenta without the injection because it didn't make sense to me to just kind of be drug free and then suddenly have the drug. So I wanted a natural, I think they call it, physiological third stage. And it was really, really hard to deliver the placenta. I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't allowed to get back in the pool because I was bleeding quite heavily. And the midwives wanted to know, like, where's the blood coming from? So I was lying on my back on the sofa with like a million towels underneath me because it's a cream sofa. And yeah, I remember I read in my notes, so I know how long it was, but apparently it was 17 minutes until placenta was delivered. But I remember that being really horrible and really awful and hard to do. And then they had to stitch me up, and it wasn't my perineum that had torn. Like I had a perfect perineum,
God, what
yay.
how tall?
But the baby had come out with his hand like up around his face, and that apparently that's what caused my labia to like shear completely off. So RIP, my right labia minora, it's gone.
God.
Yeah, so that was a quite like about 20 stitches. It took a long time. It was suggested that I transfer to hospital to have that done, and I was like, no, you crack on, I'll be fine. Yeah, that's me puffing on the gas and air, by the way, not anything else. And I think that so that was pretty like I was kind of thinking that the like a labial tear, oh, it's quite superficial, like I'll probably be fine in a week. Was not fine in a week. Like it took a really long time to feel
Yeah.
comfortable. So yeah, that's I think about it in a nutshell.
I bet you wouldn't change a thing, and I bet it was the most beautiful event of your life.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't change a thing. But I wouldn't describe it as beautiful. I would describe it as like just really, really intense.
Yeah.
That's all it was. It was amazing, but probably not beautiful. But like the baby when he was here, like, he was beautiful. Yeah, I don't want to kid myself and being like, oh, so amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. And I would, yeah, I am. I'm genuinely looking forward. If I'm lucky enough to get pregnant again, I'm genuinely like going into the birth, not scared about what is gonna happen because of
Yeah.
that. It was fine. And it's just like you said earlier, just incredible the resilience of women. Like
Yeah, it's insane. It's inhuman. It's just
madness. I could talk about
mental.
it all day. Like women are so fucking badass.
Yeah.
Like once you've birthed, however you've birthed, it makes you realize, I think, like how incredible we really are. And probably how lacking like our postnatal care is really, which is probably, we were going to talk about, I think, a bit more like why I do what I do.
Yeah, so why I don't know how which route you want to go down, because some people, even now, who've had children have never heard of mummy MOT. And I tell everybody who's pregnant, when they say, oh, what's the best thing you advise, or what's the best thing you did, or what, if they ask me any questions, well, I was like, private physio. That's what I call you. I'm like, a private physio. You can't get it on the NHS. You're not going to get postnatal physio on the
No.
NHS, or you're gonna have to have something seriously, seriously, seriously wrong with you to really, really, really need it, because they're just, again, there aren't the resources, there isn't the funding, there isn't
Yeah, so like I don't think your standard NHS Women's Health Service will accept a referral for a postnatal check. There has to be a pathology. You have to be like incontinent, or
yeah.
there's got to be something kind of wrong
Have to
that
be
they're like
suffering severely.
yeah, pretty much. And that, which is so sad, isn't it? Because I think so like a huge majority of the women I see just want an in-depth assessment. They just want to know, am I recovering okay? They've got some questions like, when should I return to this exercise, or am I safe to do this yet? So yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, for anyone who doesn't know what a mummy MOT is, it's basically a really in-depth comprehensive assessment where we look at how the muscles that are mainly affected by your pregnancy and the childbirth are recovering. So that involves your abdominal muscles and an in-depth abdominal examination, checking for any separation, diastasis recti, which you might be aware of. We see how your core muscles and how your glutes and pelvic muscles are all recovering. And a vaginal examination is a really important part of the assessment where we have a look at, whether everything is where it should be and how your pelvic floor muscles are recovering as well.
For a small fee, Lauren will come round and finger you.
Yeah, pretty much. And five-star reviews, babe. I've never had a complaint yet.
I remember being so freaked out though, still, even though you gave me so much warning and told me what was going to happen. And I just had a baby. I really thought I was going to be prepared for it. But then I was just like, when people are like, so how did it go? My first thing was, I was like, she had to put her finger inside me. I don't know. I think because I didn't have a vaginal birth. So I didn't have anybody go near my vagina. Nobody, my whole
pregnancy. This is a really common misconception, if like basically that C-section births is kind of easier in your pelvic floor, and like in some ways yes, but in a big proportion but like at least a third if not more cesareans are unplanned, so sometimes women are laboring before they get to the C-section, so you've kind of sometimes gone through both. But also just being pregnant is a huge load on your pelvic floor. And it's a huge kind of change for that to recover from. So actually it's really important to have that check. And like one of the biggest things, even if you don't, you're not worried about prolapse or anything like that, or you're not having vaginal pain, one of the biggest benefits I would say to having a mummy MOT is knowing that you are doing your pelvic floor your squeezes in the right way.
Because there's
a lot of misinformation out there about how to do it, and it's all very confusing. I think it's a bit of a minefield, and my kind of I really like to try and just really simplify it for people, and that's something that you can kind of take forward with you forever.
I can't believe it. You did blow my mind afterwards. Like I remember being like, I can't believe this, sounds so stupid now, but like it's on the exhale your pelvic floor naturally, it's the natural way to breathe,
lift it up.
And I still do them now. I actually do them, whereas before I never did them. And I know why I never did them, because they felt uncomfortable and difficult and unnatural, whereas you saying to me on the exhale, I was like, oh my god, but that is so easy. And now it's easy.
Yeah, exactly that. And there's so many like little tweaks that you can make that have such a big impact day to day. And that's kind of my MO. That's what I love to kind of teach people. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's so good. And I just want to say, I absolutely love your passion though. So on Instagram, so I'll share obviously your Instagram handle. So it is anyway at Mummy MOT Warwickshire, but then it's also got Spiral Health Physio, which is you and your partner Jack. That's your like self-employed, the business that you started together before you fell pregnant.
Precisely. So that's the kind of the physio business. Mummy MOT Warwickshire is really just my Instagram. Like I do mummy MOTs under kind of Spiral Health. That's and we the other sort of side of the business is that we're still mobile, like home visits, but Jack specializes in musculoskeletal physio as well, mainly, but because we do a lot of home visits, he has built up a caseload of like neurological injuries and all sorts of really interesting caseload. So been brilliant, because there isn't a lot of, again, community provision, unfortunately, in terms of rehab. So when people discharge from hospital after surgery or after a stroke or after a fall, what they get in terms of rehab is generally quite short-lived, and often people need more to be able to stay independent and stay strong and mobile and injury-free. So yeah, that's what we that's what Jack and what our other wonderful physio Tash take care of mainly.
Yeah, it is amazing. I love what you're doing. I love following your page. I love how passionate you are about postnatal health and women's health. And I love your rants. I love anybody that likes to rant as much as me. So, and I
Yeah.
love
Oh
how
my God. I think that's.
it's when you do a ranty post, it's always a picture of your face, like deadpan, and then like loads of writing about what you're angry about.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums up my style. I think that's why I'm so passionate, is it's a really practical way for me to practice my feminism. I'm very like, fuck the patriarchy. And it's like and now my job is to kind of help women rehabilitate themselves from the patriarchal healthcare system.
No,
It
I
keeps me
love it.
interested. Yeah, I love
I love it too.
it.
I'm always singing your praises. I'm always recommending you, and I'll always definitely share anything you post because, yeah, it is. There's not enough out there, and there's not enough people like you advocating for women's health. So thank you. And before we
Oh,
finish,
it's a
so I think
pleasure.
I said I would love to have, this is something I'm trying to implement. We'll see if it continues with the rest of my episodes. So you're going to be the first. So, Lauren, what is the best advice you can give to a new or expecting mum?
I would urge anyone to, I think I me and my really good friend were talking about this yesterday, about the newborn stage and whether we enjoyed it, what we'd do differently, if anything. And it was actually her that said she would recommend that people would take time to think about whether they really wanted visitors in the first few days, especially, or actually whether it might be better to have like the first 2 weeks just you, your partner, and your baby, and not have any pressure on doing anything outside of that 2 weeks. And I think in some ways I really wish I'd done that. I think I did mention it at the time, but it was quickly vetoed because, I think parents, like, how could we do that to our parents, keep them waiting for 2 weeks? And so I do get that. And I think for us, we were very lucky in that our parents were local. So they came round, only stay an hour. Like, they don't have to stay with us overnight for 3 or 4 nights. Basically, I would, my best advice would be like, really think about whether you need those visitors in those early days. Or whether they can wait, whether you can kind of put them off, because you're going to be sore, you're going to be bleeding, you're going to be leaking from places you didn't know you were going to be leaking from. And you are just going to want that time. You don't ever get that time back with your newborn. You're not going to want to hand them over to anyone either. And you should not feel guilty about that. And you should not feel pressured to play past the baby. So I would urge people to kind of set boundaries basically early on and stick to them.
Yeah,
It's probably
I
my
would
best advice.
say that is a really, really good sound piece of advice because I also look back and wish I set clearer boundaries and said, no, I'm not ready. Because it's not, again, it's not just about the baby and other people's needs and feelings. I'd just been through major abdominal surgery, 10 night stay in hospital, and I'd barely been home an hour and we had family round and it was late in the evening. And although it was wonderful and it's nothing on them, I just wish I said no for a couple of days. So yeah,
Yeah, exactly. It can wait, and I think, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that there's all this pressure, societal pressure, to like go out and have brunch, go and show off your baby. And like, if you feel like doing that, then that's amazing, good for you. But if you don't, then don't. Just
Don't do it.
stay in your little bubble and cuddle up and hunker down, and there's nothing better than those newborn snuggles anyway. So just like, stay naked as long as you can.
Thank you so much again, to everybody who's listened. Thank you to Lauren for coming on and for being so patient with me as it was my first recording in over 18 months. I hope you really enjoyed that. If you check out the show notes, I will list what I'm about to say anyway. But if you don't already follow Lauren, her Instagram handles are at Spiral Health Physio or at Mummy MOT Warwickshire. And that's it for today. So thank you very much. Take care, everybody.